Hello, this is J.P. Kirsch, and I'm your moderator this evening. I'm here with State Senator Art Haywood and his guests. We want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Haywood or any of his guests, press star 3 at any time on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 to ask a question. Now let's welcome Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you, J.P., and thank you to all of the area residents participating on tonight's call. I'm Senator Art Haywood, and I'm holding this live telephone town hall. We will discuss tonight dual enrollment of high school students at area colleges with my two special guests. First, Sandra Crenshaw, Associate Provost of Arcadia University, and Laura Sibilla, co-founder of Building 21. She'll tell us more about what that is. This format will allow you to listen in and even ask questions from the comfort of your home. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press star 3 on your phone. Now, I'd like to give each of my guests a brief opportunity to share with the listeners who you are and what you're doing with respect to dual enrollment and helping our young people move forward in higher education. I'll start off with Sandra Crenshaw.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Haywood. It's great to be here. As the senator has said, my name is Sandra Crenshaw, and I'm the Associate Provost at Arcadia University. And our dual enrollment program has been around for about 8 years now. We've been experiencing 8 years of growth because dual enrollment really seems to be getting a lot of traction, more and more traction every year. And every year, we have over 100 students in good standing with their high schools, with a 3.0 GPA and recommendations from their counselors, either participating in classes that Arcadia runs at their high schools, or coming to our campus to take courses on campus in our regular schedule. Now, the part of our view of dual enrollment is that it is pivotal for, and so important for students to be able to explore a little bit about their careers and what they might be interested in studying and get that little taste of what college expectations are in the classroom. And, you know, to have some good interactions with university faculty that often lead to a little bit more confidence in the students as they look and search for where they want to call their higher education home. And also, you know, it's good. We wind up with a lot of applications and a lot of students at Arcadia with our faculty because they have those connections out there already. So a lot of this really has to do with, in our perspective anyway, has to do with exploring careers and testing those waters early on before those deep, deep commitments are made, because we understand how expensive it is to go to college. So our dual enrollment program is discounted deeply. And depending on what high schools you go to, it may be paid by the district. We have agreements with some of the districts. So this, along with workshops that we'll be doing moving forward with Senator Haywood's office about career exploration, and all, it's really part of the core of what we think about dual enrollment and helping students prepare for college, but also giving them a little taste of what those expectations are.
Great. Thank you so much. Laura, would you share with the listeners more about what's happening at Building 21 and dual enrollment and higher education opportunities.
Yes. Thank you, Senator, for having me on the show tonight. My name is Laura Shabilla. I'm the co-founder of Building 21. And Building 21 is a nonprofit that works with school districts to rethink high schools. We have a high school with the School District of Philadelphia in the West Oak Lane section of the city. And our vision and the work that we've done with the high school is about really personalizing pathways for students through high school. And college and career exposure is a really important part of our vision. And so we have been working with different partners since the school started to be able to provide as many students as possible with opportunities to gain college credit while they're still in high school. And these opportunities have benefited students greatly. We have students who have graduated from college a year early because they've been able to accrue so many credits while they're still in high school. And we've had other students who, based on the experiences they've had taking classes on college campuses, have felt more prepared and ready to go to college and have also learned a little bit more about what they like and they don't like that has helped them make better choices as they're transitioning out of high school into college. So we feel like dual enrollment opportunities are a really important part of the high school experience, and we want to expand opportunities to as many students as possible in our school.
Great, thanks. JP, we're going to go straight to callers, but I've got one question that I'd like to lead with as we queue up callers for their questions as well. And I am familiar more and more with college offering much more than a four-year experience. I've become much more familiar with colleges doing one-year certificate programs, two-year associate programs. And so what college means seems to be very multifaceted. And would you address what opportunities folks, young people get from dual enrollment that may not necessarily lead to four-year opportunity or degree, but can yet lead to a family-sustaining job and a good outlook on life?
Senator, pardon my interruption to your question. I just want to remind our listeners that if you have a question about dual enrollment for high school students to enroll in college classes while still in school, or education questions for our guests, press *3 on your telephone's keypad. That's *3 to ask a question of your guests. Sorry, Senator, go ahead with your question.
So, thanks. Senator Haywood, I really appreciate your question. This is work that I feel like we're doing at Building 21, and I think as the world changes and work changes and secondary education, post-secondary education changes, what college looks like for students is going to get more and more creative, and I think there's going to be more integration between college and careers that is not necessarily always going to look like a traditional pathway. And so what we found with our students is we want to be able to provide opportunities for some students to be able to take dual enrollment in order to get a certification or a credential that might lead them directly into employment. Some students take dual enrollment because they want to pursue a four-year degree and they want to do that for, you know, quicker and at lower cost. But part of what dual enrollment offers is the opportunity to kind of stack courses and credentials in ways that are sometimes leading to four-year degrees, but often can be two-year degrees or certifications as well. And so, and I think we're going to see more and more opportunities that colleges are going to offer for what's going to look like more non-traditional college experiences for kids that are going to start even earlier, as early as like 11th grade, I think, for high school students.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I'll pick up there directly from you, Laura, that is exactly, you've hit the nail on the head. I don't know that I need to say any more. It was well put.
Okay, JP, let's hear from the callers.
All right. Well, we're going to go to first Ben in Glenside. Ben, I'm sorry, you're on live with Senator Haywood and his guests.
Hi, Senator. Hi, guests. How are you today?
Good.
Good. I was just wondering what we can do to keep our public education up to snuff and maybe make this possible to take 12 years instead of 16.
That is exactly where we're going. See if we can get this maximize the experience of young people. I don't know. I'd be glad to hear from folks from Building 21 or Arcadia. What do you think?
So, Ben, can you say
a little bit more about that?
Laura?
No, go ahead.
I was just curious. So when you say 12 instead of 16, are you saying you want to know how we can get students right out of high school into meaningful employment without having to go on to further school? Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I feel like in the past we've been able to have individuals come out of high school with the skills needed to work and join the workforce. It's only very recently. I would put a lot of it on the lack of employment opportunities that have pushed people into a four-year degree or even MBA. I know there are lots of my contemporaries that did not find employment, so they went back to school for another 4 years to get that MBA, and then also were still not able to find employment. So just my question is really, why does it need to take 16 years? What can we do to make it take 12, make it take 8? I don't understand why people couldn't be educated at the age of 18 to be productive members of the workforce.
Oh, let me address that very quickly. The state higher education chancellor has shared with all of us that the jobs of the future will require some level of higher education, whether it's 13 or 14, maybe not 16. And the competition for work that is going to be in the United States in terms of where we compete in the world will be for a skilled position, not low-skilled positions. Many of the jobs that you're referring to that did not require a higher education or higher skills are gone, either through many of them through automation, more lost from automation than from overseas. And so you've mentioned the job qualifications. I know the chancellor said that he anticipated that 60% of the jobs in the future will require some level of higher education. And it is because of the high skill that we're going to need to maintain in the United States of America for our folks to be employed. I hope that was a so job competition is right, and the low-skill, low-education jobs are decreasing in the United States and largely due to automation.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Senator, that is, you know, our experience and position as well. I will say one thing which I think is interesting. For a lot of students, their senior year in high school isn't as effective as it could be. And so something we've been thinking about lately is, what does it look like to create a different structure for 11th and 12th grade and the first 2 years after high school? Because for a lot of students, I think if we do a better job aligning workforce credentials, post-secondary, and what they're doing in high school, I do think we can help more students get more skills and better credentials if we eliminate some of the transitions and some of the obstacles that are in place right now for students. So one of the things we're looking at is, what does it look like to create an 11 to 14 pathway that has credentials, apprenticeships, work experience, and post-secondary courses attached to it to help prepare students more efficiently?
Great, thanks so much. Thanks for calling.
All right, at this time, I'd like to remind our listeners that you are listening to a live telephone town hall with State Senator Art Haywood discussing dual enrollment for high school students who receive college credits while still in high school with special guest Sandra Crenshaw of Arcadia University and Laura Shabilla of Building 21. If you have a question about dual enrollment or any of the transitional issues getting your child from high school into college, press *3 on your telephone's keypad. That's *3 to ask a question of our guests. Senator, are you ready to go to another caller?
Yes.
All right, we're going out to Mount Airy. Andrea, do you have a question for Senator Haywood or his guests?
Yes, good evening, Senator Haywood and guests. Thank you for hosting this. I'm interested because I have an 11th grader going into 11th grade now. And I wanted to know, how do you go about finding out if your child's school is a participating member in this program, or do they have to be a participating member? And how do you start the whole process of getting your child enrolled in this dual program?
Dual enrollment,
yes.
Yes, thank you for calling. Which high school?
He goes to Prep Charter in South Philadelphia.
Okay. What do you think, guess?
I would always start.
Well,
with the
I think the first step absolutely should be checking with the guidance counselor because there may be some programs at the high school already happening. Or there are several universities that are offering dual enrollment programs. So there may be already a connection that the guidance counselor would know about. And if not, maybe that guidance counselor could help point your student to local programs.
Guidance counselor, okay.
All right,
thank you,
Andrea. Next, we're going to go out to Vivian in Mount Airy. Vivian, you are on live with Senator Haywood and his guests.
Hi, my name is Vivian. Thank you for having this town hall. My son is in seventh grade, so we're starting that journey towards high school. Mm-hmm. When I went on the school district's website, what I found is there are a lot of great programs for high school students, but a few of them want you to be a high school student in Philadelphia. My son is a resident of Philadelphia, but he goes to private school in Montgomery County. Is there any discussion about opening up some of these great programs that the school district has for our high school children to all students who reside in Philadelphia and not just the one that go to Philadelphia public schools?
So that's a great question. I should share, Vivian, that dual enrollment opportunities are available in many counties in Pennsylvania, Montgomery County, Delaware County, Philadelphia County. So the dual enrollment opportunities are not limited to Philadelphia County. However, public versus private school is a good question as well. I did just want to clarify that we're not limited to Philadelphia County. But what about the private schools? Do the kids who are at private schools also get an opportunity for dual enrollment?
Absolutely. And there could be a number of different ways that we might come at it. Whether, as I said earlier, Arcadia welcomes students from any different high schools onto campus to take classes. There's just maybe some arrangements with guidance counselors and the administration at the high schools if there isn't a program in the school already. So, Laura, you have some other ideas too?
No, I was going to share, and depending on the private school, I think some private schools tend to lean more towards AP classes than dual enrollment classes, depending on the school. So again, I think the guidance counselor is a great resource in terms of what are the opportunities for advanced learning, whether it's dual enrollment or AP classes or honors classes that exist in that school.
I have a follow-up question. So what's the main advantage for a student to have a dual enrollment experience as opposed to an advanced placement experience?
Well, one of the challenges, a couple of challenges around advanced placement. On the one hand, not all of the credits transfer into universities, but they don't necessarily transfer as the courses that are taken. So you have an AP biology class, for example. Going to a university, they might take the credits, but that AP might not allow the student to skip that first Bio 101 class. It really depends on the university where the student is transferring. The other side of this is, and this is a national trend, that sometimes honors programs and AP programs are expensive to run. So one of the shifts that we've seen many schools take is that they begin to offer dual enrollment courses in lieu of the AP courses. Now, certainly, it's a great experience in those AP courses and in the dual enrollment courses. It's really it really focuses a bit on the school's philosophy about those student outcomes and what it is providing the student and how it's providing all of these things to the students.
Okay.
Yeah, and the only thing I would...
Go ahead.
I would just add one exciting trend I've seen is that for some AP classes, colleges have been willing to look at that AP class and say, okay, we will also provide dual enrollment credit for this. If the student passes the AP test, great, they can get AP credit. If they don't pass the AP test and they pass the content of the course, they can still get a dual enrollment credit.
Mm.
And so I really like that emerging opportunity as well.
Thanks so much.
All right. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to a live telephone town hall with Senator Art Haywood and his expert guests talking about dual enrollment for high school students in college classes, and any of the other issues that will take your child from high school and into college. Press *3 on your phone's keypad if you have a question for Senator Haywood or his guests. Senator, we're going to go to one of our online questions right now. Ron in Glenside wants to know, what are some of the typical course offerings that high school students find success in dual enrollment? For either of our guests.
So my experience is it depends a lot on the interest of the student. And when you're doing dual enrollment at the high school level, part of what you want to do is try to really understand what the student's aspirations are for when they leave high school. And so for some students, taking advanced math classes or getting that first English course under their belt is a really important first step for them. For other students, it might be exploring a particular career area that they think they might be interested in, but they're not sure. I think what you want to make sure of is that the school is really matching the student's interests with the course selections that they're taking. And I also have seen a lot of success with students who, you know, don't necessarily feel like they have the confidence to go on to college, but then once they take that first English course and they find themselves to be successful, all of a sudden you see a student who feels like, I can do this. And so, and then they are not taking developmental courses when they move on into college. And so I like to think about what's going to boost their confidence, what are their interest areas, and how does this match up with something that they want to do next.
And yeah, absolutely. I'd like to echo everything that you said, Laura. The uh,
the exploration is a very, very important part, and building that confidence is a very important part. And to that exploration, there are any variety of dual enrollment courses. And with the student moving in, not having full-time started at a college yet, the student can take just about any course, and it will count in some way toward that degree once they get to a university. So it's time to go out and explore and take those courses that they just find interesting.
That's great. JP, I have another question.
Okay.
So one of our guests mentioned the cost savings and that a student may graduate in 3 years if they were doing 4 years, or maybe could get a semester or some time off of career certification. So I'm interested in hearing something about the economic value in terms of the cost of education, and to what extent a high school student could then get maybe a year or so of college credits while in high school. Does that work, or how would that work?
So I think some of this depends on what the funding mechanism is. So, you know, Senator Hayward, you've been a huge advocate for this at the state level, and as a result, there's state funding that comes to the district to be able to support dual enrollment programs. So if I put a student into a dual enrollment program and they go through, you know, six classes, which was the case for some of our students, that is fully paid for through the dual enrollment agreements with the School District of Philadelphia. So now that student enters college not having used any of their financial aid or any of their own resources for those courses. And they can continue through college with whatever their, you know, financial aid package is, or however they're going to finance their education. So when that happens, it's a huge leg up for students to be able to save a lot of money in terms of their post-secondary education, thanks to the resources that have been provided by the state to the school district.
Wow. Yeah, that could be significant. About how much money are we talking about, dollars and cents?
So I would say it depends on the school, but, you know, for many students, they're paying maybe if it's $125 a credit at a community college, or $400, $500, $600 a course, and you're taking, you know, it's several thousand dollars that they could be saved by doing dual enrollment while they're still in high school.
That's significant. Thanks so much. P, let's go back to the callers.
All right, back to the callers. Margie and Logan, you're on live with Senator Haywood and his guests.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, Margie.
All right. Yes. I have a question. I have a seven-year-old. I know we're talking about high school students, but I'm thinking about her moving up forward.
Good.
With our IEP, what kind of programs will y'all have for high school students with IEPs and learning disabilities?
Great question.
If they wanted to go to college or take up some kind of trade.
Yeah, so I would, and I'd love, you know, I think, Sandy, you can answer from the college perspective, but from the high school perspective, about, you know, 20-30% of students in our schools have IEPs, and part of what we try to do is personalize their supports as much as possible, and we have seen students who have IEPs with the right support be very successful in dual enrollment classes or in technical classes if they want to move into some kind of a trade or into some kind of a career. I think, you know, for all parents who have students with IEPs, really being a strong advocate for making sure that your child gets the services that they need while they're in the school and recognizing that personalizing learning for students with IEPs is what schools should be doing for every student. It's about making sure they have the supports that they need to be successful. And if you do that, I think students can then really achieve at high levels, whether it's in dual enrollment or in some kind of a career pathway. But it all starts with the supports that the school is able to provide.
Okay.
Yes, and that support transitions over to the college level too. So we are encounter every student and offer all of those supports that we would offer our traditional age students, with whether it's tutoring or support services, acknowledging the IEP and making whatever adjustments and accommodations are necessary. So I think that we also are developing transition programs as well. So I think that dual enrollment could absolutely be a part of your student's future.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Margie. All right, Senator, we're going to go back to one of the online questions. But first, I want to remind our callers that you're listening to a live telephone town hall with State Senator Art Haywood. We're talking about college education and dual enrollment. If you have a question for Senator Haywood or his guest, please press *3 on your telephone keypad. That's *3 to become part of the conversation. One of our online questions, Janelle in Germantown, has a question that I think a lot of parents might have, and that's, as we talked about these emerging careers, and a lot of parents might not be up on what the latest in technology is, how, as they plan for their children's careers, what are some careers that they should know about and you can introduce to their students?
So I think in this region in particular. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You got further than I did down the sentence, so it's on you, Laura.
It's hard. I'm so used to being on Zoom where you can see when someone's about to talk. I think in this region in particular, the idea of, you know, eds and meds, right? So there's lots of opportunities in a variety of healthcare, health careers, biomedical careers. Information technology is everywhere. And so I think people think of that as a career path, but it really is a career in every industry. And so I think that's an important area of growth. And then I just want to highlight, we have a huge teacher shortage, a national teacher shortage, a local teacher shortage. And in particular, if we're trying to really diversify the workforce, we need to start to think about how we create pipelines into education locally as well. And so those are some of the areas we're focusing on, as well as the trades. We were able to create a pre-apprenticeship program that also provides some college courses in the trades, and we have a number of students who are really interested in those careers as well, which are very lucrative and also hard to staff.
And I would add, one of the interesting things that is emerging right now in workforce trends is what we might think of as those careers that hover in between. Laura, you had mentioned healthcare and everything involved in healthcare. But thinking about healthcare, for example, in complex ways, because healthcare needs writers and managers and business people and human resources, and a lot of it is rather focused on that subject area. So being in those in-between places is a really interesting place to be that we don't necessarily think of right out of the gate. Another area that I would also suggest is data science. There is a lot of growth in industry around data and managing data and what that means and how we look at it and interpret it. And that is across higher ed, that is one of the fields that is emerging at a lot of schools right now in response to workforce demands across the country.
Great. Oh, that's fantastic. And one thing I would say in terms of we've got a list of what looks like is emerging, and I would say what is declining. And you can see all the low-skilled jobs, many of them declining. And so folks get a higher skill, good chance they'll have employment opportunities. Folks have no skills, good chance that over time they will not.
All right, yeah, and I think we're seeing that especially in after COVID with retail, where so many of our students have, you know, found success in the past, and now so many of those stores are closing or scaling back in terms of in-person retail as well.
Right.
All right, if we're ready, we'll go back to the phone lines. Alicia in Mount Airy, you are on live with Senator Haywood and his guests.
Hi, Senator Haywood. Thank you for this great conversation and for your guests for sharing all the information. As a family community advocate, I would like to know if there's outreach at the middle school level to influence youth about different pathways to college. And also, if there's outreach for homeschooling families, like how could a homeschooling family do dual enrollment?
Great questions. What do you
Well, I would say that there is outreach to homeschool families. And I can speak to that not only from Arcadia's point of view, but I know that that many of the community colleges in the area also offer dual enrollment, and there is a lot of direct outreach going on to those homeschool organizations.
And in terms of middle schools, I think there's always a big high school fair in the fall, which I would make sure whether you're in touch with families who are homeschooling or have middle school students, the high school fair is a great opportunity for families to go, meet representatives from all the schools, get information. And most of the high schools during the fall will offer opportunities for students to come in and shadow. We'll be doing orientations. We'll have open houses as part of the recruitment. I think it comes up fast. And so high schools start recruitment from September, and it usually closes in mid-November. And during that time, there's a lot of presentations to middle schools. A lot of the middle schools will take students on field trips to different high schools. But if there's a family looking at high schools and they're interested in a variety of high schools, if they're interested in district schools, the district website is a great resource. The college fair the high school fair is a great resource. And then reaching out to local high schools and saying, can I come and shadow for a day, or do you have an orientation session, is another great option.
Great, great. I have a question if I could interrupt. Is that okay?
It's your call, Senator.
Sure thing.
Thanks so much. So this goes to the question about which jobs or careers are promising or not promising. And I know that it's hard to predict what career will be dominant, you know, 20 or 30 years from now. So much changes in the world in 10 years. But I am wondering if Arcadia has any kind of career advising program to help students think about the directions they may want to head into, or is there any kind of test or aptitude test? But just wondering, how do we present to families the choices? And let me take one step back. My office a few years ago found that there were many career opportunities in the mechanical trades, dental hygienists, where an individual could get good income, safe work, and have a good life. But folks were not, they were thinking about trades and mechanics like they were in the 70s, not as they are today. And so we've had a tremendous challenge trying to open up the minds of folks to see the range of good opportunities that may have a stigma attached to it that may have fit the 1970s but does not fit today. What are you all are doing to help people see the careers that really are changing and don't fit the past?
You know, Senator Haywood, thank you very much for saying that as you did, because you are absolutely right that in many careers we're a few decades behind in what is actually happening in those careers. And at Arcadia, we do have a program. We have an Office of Career Education. And that phrase career education is very important because it speaks to exactly what you're talking about. It is education about the careers that are available and the aptitudes of the students for those careers. And it's education about the student themselves and the whole career ecosystem, as we call it at Arcadia. And one of the things that we do is that we focus on the student over 4 years from the time that they come in. We start the process of working with the student and looking to support the student in those critical semesters at the beginning of their college career when they're making those decisions, and advising them if they change their minds during that time at the university, and then helping them through internships and those community and practical experiences that sometimes are required as part of their majors, all the way through to graduation and working through finding that first job. Mm-hmm. And we have a great record of job placement for our students. So we are so proud of every student that comes through and works through those 4 years in in our Office of Career Education, and because they shine at the end of those 4 years. So it's great to see them graduating and moving on to those careers. But we are with them from day one.
Great. I have a question for Laura at Building 21, and you've seen some successful students who've done dual enrollment, and wondering if there's any examples of dual enrollment experiences that you would share with those who are listening to create a more of a story of the experience of a young person who has been in dual enrollment, and maybe what they thought at the outset and then what they thought at the conclusion. Any student experiences you might want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I have one student who immediately comes to mind, and I think about her a lot. So we saw in her a real talent in her English classes, in her writing classes. She was a great writer, and she was very creative. She did not at all see that in herself. and was really down on herself, didn't believe she had strong academic skills, didn't plan on going to college at all. We convinced her to do a dual enrollment class in English. When she went into the dual enrollment class, she had some setbacks, she struggled, she persevered, and at the end of the day, she got the highest grade. She was the only high school student in the class and got the highest grade of any of the students in the class.
Wow.
And when she brought that back, so she's now at Bloomsburg, successfully going through college, pursuing an English major. And it was that experience that I think showed her what we saw in her that she didn't see in herself. And it really was one of those moments where you're like, wow, this really made a difference.
That's great. That is good. It sounds like it helped her to see who she really was.
Yeah, and to see her skills. Like, I just don't think she understood that how talented she was. She didn't believe that she had the skills that she actually had, and she didn't really have anything to compare it to. But then once she took the class and got, you know, did so well against college students, I think she believed what we had been telling her, and now I think it gave her the courage to go on and do her four-year degree.
That is tremendous. That is tremendous. Now, I do have a follow-up question. So students who are in dual enrollment from Building 21, do other students have any sense of what they're doing? And I say that from the perspective of wondering how the positive experience of one student can encourage others to do or try the same thing.
Yeah, so we're a small school, and it's a tight-knit community. So students definitely are aware of what their peers are doing, and I think there's a high level of support that students provide for each other. And so for some students, they see their friend, like this young woman I was talking about, succeed in this, and it makes them want to get involved. And so the next time there's an open house around dual enrollment opportunities, or the next time we do a town hall, they come. And students bring their friends, right, and say, I did this, you can do it, let's go. And it gets them involved. You know, for other students, maybe they see that and think, I don't necessarily want to take a dual enrollment class, but I'm inspired by the fact that they did something they didn't think they could do. This is what I'm not sure I can do, but I really want to try. And it inspires them to use their voice to say, do you have this kind of an opportunity for me? And so I think as people watch their peers take risks and succeed, it makes them more willing to take risks. And that's, it's powerful. It's really exciting to watch. And I think peers have more influence on each other, you know, than anybody else, especially in adolescence.
Definitely more than the older uncle or grandfather. I can tell you
or mother.
That.
I have a 14-year-old who's hard-headed. He doesn't listen to anything I have to say right now.
Wow, that's fantastic. Okay. Do we have any more callers? Now, I only ask that because it is now 7:55, and we definitely end our call no later than 8. Are we prepared to wrap up, or do we have any questions that we have yet to address?
Senator, we have one more question out there from Bruce in West Mount Airy. Bruce has been on the line a while. Bruce, do you have a question for Senator Haywood and his guest?
Well, I guess it's for the university college person. What is Arcadia's position on vaccinations for students? As many of the private schools are doing.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Could you say that again? I think you dropped out in the middle of what you were saying.
With COVID vaccinations, is Arcadia requiring students to get them, as is University of Pennsylvania, Drexel, Lafayette, and most of the other private schools in Pennsylvania?
Yes, Arcadia is requiring students to vaccinate unless there is some medical reason that the student cannot be vaccinated. And that was a long conversation, and we chose in this past year to take the whole year and provide education online, and we're hoping to be full up and ready to go come September with these new protocols.
All right, thanks so much. I think we're now pretty close to the end, and as a caller indicated, many of the private schools appear to be requiring vaccination. Of course, I will share I was on the governor's vaccine task force appointed back in February, and we did all that we could to make vaccines readily available and hopefully get them to folks on an equitable basis as well. And at this time, the vaccines are pretty much available at most pharmacies, and that is very good. And some doctor's offices are also getting the vaccine. So we are pretty close to being able to vaccinate people for COVID-19 as we are able to vaccinate people for the flu, which is just a normal vaccination process. So we made some significant progress on vaccination yet. We still have some distance to go, but here in Pennsylvania, I know folks are watching television and you're hearing stories of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, all these states that have low vaccination. I want to be clear, that is not Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has a much higher vaccination rate than these southern states. So when you see Florida, don't think Pennsylvania. When you see Alabama, don't think Pennsylvania. Our vaccination rate is one of the top in the nation, and we are not those states. All right, JP.
All right, Senator, we're ready for you to wrap things up if you want, if you have any closing remarks.
Well, I want to thank each of you for participating in our telephone hall discussion tonight. I really want to thank the two special guests, Laura Crenshaw and Laura Shabilla. These contributions that you are making at Arcadia and Building 21 are creating significant opportunities for our young people and are an example of what can be done so that our young people can get their full self-realization. As we heard the story about the young woman who did not see in herself that she was an excellent writer, but through dual enrollment, she saw it and went on to higher education, where I hope she is able to fulfill her dreams. Now, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. Thank you all again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 215-242-8171, or you can visit my website at senatorhaywood.com. Thank you all again, Laura and Sandra. Good night to everyone.
Thank you for participating in Senator Art Haywood's Telephone Town Hall. You've been a great audience, and thank you for sharing your evening with us.